It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's really hard for some in the administration to understand how people live paycheck to paycheck. It's sad, though, that it's taken this long to come to an obvious conclusion. Disagreement in policy should never be a reason to shut down government, really shouldn't, especially, again, for a period of time that has an impact on the paychecks. I'm sad it has taken this long, and I salute the minority, the Democratic leader in the Senate. But our unity is our power. And that is what maybe the president underestimated.
And as Nancy Pelosi takes a victory lap over the ending of the shutdown and a bill passed by both houses of Congress not providing any money for a border wall, Sandy Rios with you on this Monday. Yeah, it was probably kind of a shocker to many of you when the president decided what seems to be to cave in his announcement on this particular incident. When he promised a border wall, he promised. Many of us were happy that he shut down the government, that he was holding firm. But this is what he said. I want you to hear what the president has to say, then I have a lot more to tell you about it. So let's listen to at least the first part of it.
I am very proud to announce today that we have reached a deal to end the shutdown and reopen the federal government. As everyone knows, I have a very powerful alternative, but I didn't want to use it at this time. Hopefully, it will be unnecessary. I want to thank all of the incredible federal workers and their amazing families who have shown such extraordinary devotion in the face of this recent hardship. You are fantastic people. You are incredible patriots. Many of you have suffered far greater than anyone but your families would know or understand. And not only did you not complain, but in many cases, you encouraged me to keep going because you care so much about our country and about its border security. Again, I thank you. All Americans, I thank you. You are very, very special people. I am so proud that you are citizens of our country. When I say, make America great again, it could never be done without you. Great people. In a short while, I will sign a bill to open our government for 3 weeks until February 15th. I will make sure that all employees receive their back pay very quickly or as soon as possible. It'll happen fast. I am asking Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to put this proposal on the floor immediately. After 36 days of spirited debate and dialogue, I have seen and heard from enough Democrats and Republicans that they are willing to put partisanship aside, I think, and put the security of the American people first.
Well, that's at least the first part of the president's announcement. I have to say that I was surprised and disappointed, but that's not the end of the story. So just stay with me. I'm just confessing to you my own progression on this. You have no idea. Unless you have lived and worked in Washington, D.C., you have no idea of the power of the swamp. Honestly, it is tangible. You can feel it. Federal workers are the people that live there. And they complain, and they control, and they have a ton of power. And the media carries their water, and so do the members of Congress. Because, you know, Mitch McConnell, just like Chuck Schumer, reads the New York Times. Because that's the go-to piece for those leaders. And I mean, that's metaphorical, but it's true. And they respond to all the negative press because, oh my goodness, they don't want to be poorly thought of in the swamp. Because there are parties to go to, there are people to please, there are monies, there's money to be made, there's power to be wielded. And so they don't care so much, really, it seems to me, about the parents and families who have lost loved ones. They don't care about them. They don't care about the ranchers at the southern border. They don't care about small towns whose facilities are overrun, whose public welfare rolls are not going to American citizens, but to the overwhelming amount of illegal immigrants who've been assigned or find their way to their states. They don't care so much about that. But, oh, my goodness, yes, they care about the federal worker. Now, look, my own husband was a federal worker, so federal workers are important. But I would tell you that the vast, I don't know what percentage, tons of them are there because they're just filling time. They're making a ton of money at your expense, and it's kind of pay for play. You know, you support Democrats, and we give you a job, and you've got a pension. You've got a six-figure job, and you get off on all the holidays. I mean, it's a cool deal. It's a cushy deal. And so when federal workers don't get their pay, and many of them are really fine people. I know that. I'm talking to some of them. My own husband is a really fine person. But a ton of them are freeloaders. So, and they make a lot of noise. And the president heard that noise, and so did members of the Republican Party, which is actually what happened. I'm going to tell you, on Thursday, when these bills came to the Senate, Mitch McConnell put out a bill that offered what the president had offered to the Democrats. It was they had DACA, giving three more years to DACA recipients and temporary protected status to extend that, plus the border wall, plus all the other things he talked about, the electronics, more Border Patrol agents and all that. You fill in the blanks. I hope you remember some of that. But and then Chuck Schumer's bill was presented, which was full funding, a la the Democrats' best wish list, plus no money for the bill, but for the wall. No money. Zero, zip, ned, nada. And guess what? Well, let's see. There were six Republican senators who voted for Chuck Schumer's bill. And they are Senator Lamar Alexander, Senator Susan Collins, Senator Cory Gardner, Senator Johnny Isaacson, Senator Lisa Murkowski, and the new Senator, Mr. Mitt Romney. All of them voted for Chuck Schumer's bill with no funding for the border wall. So just make a mental note of that, as you would. So what happened with this? Well, my best understanding is that pressure was brought upon. There was quite a meeting with members close to leadership. And Mike Pence, there was a lot of yelling, pressure, very upset with the president. The senators are feeling the heat. My goodness, you've got to get the government back open. They don't feel the urgency for all the people that are dying, or they claim to care about the opioid crisis, but not so concerned about that. But oh my goodness, the federal workers, they must be served. These are the unions. These are our constituency. These are the voters. And we're getting a lot of feedback. You've got to fix this. How dare you? So really, the president stood by himself. There were some exceptions. Let me say that there are a couple of heroes in this from my perspective. Senator Tom Cotton and Senator Mike Lee both voted against the McConnell bill. That's the other side of this. Why? Because they are against the extra provisions for Dreamers and also for the temporary protected status folks. Plus, the bill that was going to be passed did not give any money to what Trump wanted for border wall. None of it, for the Ballard steel that he was talking about. It went out of its way, the wording, to say that walls that were in place as of 2017, those technologies that had been used could be used again, but nothing new. None of the prototypes that the president wanted, and not that steel barrier with the slats that he had proposed. And so Senator Lee issued this statement. It is, of course, a relief that the shutdown is over, but the shutdown was not created by the crisis on the border. It was created by the failure of Congress to do its job. The way we are doing things now is convenient for politicians, but not for the American people. Government funding and immigration policy shouldn't be a secret negotiation, but an open debate on the floors of the House and Senate. That's the only way the American people can be included in this process. Now, there is no doubt. And I hope that I'm failing to emphasize this, that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are intransigent, and the leadership and the rank and file of the Democratic Party are ridiculously off the charts, shamefully off the charts in terms of protecting the American people when it comes to the southern border. But I have to tell you that it's Republican leadership who have done more damage in the sense that they could have passed this legislation when Paul Ryan was Speaker of the House and Mitch McConnell was leader of the Senate, but they did nothing. They did nothing. And my understanding is that since this election, they have still been doing nothing. That Mitch McConnell is leading the Senate by doing nothing, that they're not passing any bills, that they work as little as possible, 2 days a week, 2.5 days a week. They're not getting the president's nominations through. Did you hear Mitch McConnell or Kevin McCarthy? Kevin McCarthy also is complicit with this. Did you hear them doing, Kevin makes some speeches occasionally. He'll do sound bites on television, but they are not doing anything. Practically speaking, we're not doing anything to help the president. What would they be doing? Well, they'd be holding votes to reveal, to have a discussion on the floor about what this all means and why border security is important, to bring people in forward to testify. Instead, what Mitch McConnell did was he brought a bill that was written in secrecy, which is what Mike Lee's referring to here, 1,700 pages, and laid it on the desks of senators and expected them to vote for his bill without discussion or adding any amendments. This is the way the Senate is being run under Mitch McConnell. This is the way it's a lack of action. It is disgraceful. It's absolutely disgraceful. So the president really has been trying to do this thing all by himself. And you have to know that. Okay, so did the president cave? Are we not going to get a wall? Is this the end of it? Well, you know that he has said very clearly, the government now, the Congress, meaning the people I just described, there's 14 of them. They're going to get together and they're going to try to come up with some solution for border security. Well, trust me, I don't expect that to go well, but we'll see. The president has declared that February 15th is the next deadline. That means that federal workers are being paid. It's already in process. If they haven't received checks, they will very shortly. And they'll get them through February 15th, at which time, if there's no legislative solution, the president will either shut down the government again or he will declare it a national emergency. There are a couple of other options that are in the works. I can tell you that people are working on this. There is a way for the House to get around Nancy Pelosi. If only Kevin McCarthy would stop flying home to California to do fundraisers, maybe they might be able to do it. But I'm telling you, I've been telling you this for a long time, haven't I? That the leadership of the Republican Party is disgraceful. And the president really is working on this all by himself. He is promising that there will be a wall, that he will not stop. And according to people that I'm reading, Ken Kuklowski, who's often on the show, Ken is an attorney. He's written a great piece in which he says President Trump has legal authority to declare border emergency to build the wall. And Ken traces the constitutional mandate. And also he talks about other statutes that have been passed and declared since then. I can't go into all of it, but Ken is pretty convinced that the president has every right. Others are saying that the Supreme Court will absolutely rule in his favor if it gets to the court because of his constitutional powers. Well, we'll see about that. It's an ultimatum. It's going to be up on February the 15th. The president is assuring us there will be a wall. And so it's interesting. You know what? His approval rating has not gone down at all, in spite of what people are saying and how they're indicating it. In fact, according to a Harvard poll, his approval rating has held steady at 45%. That's even actually up a percentage point since the shutdown, which I think is amazing. And it's pointed out by this poll, this represents a better start of the election cycle than either President Barack Obama or Bill Clinton had. You won't hear that in many sources. And that's Mark Penn, a former Democratic strategist who did the poll. All right, so there is some good news and some reason for hope. I'll be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Question: do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE, 833-44-BIBLE.
Do you have legal protection as an educator in our public schools?
Welcome to Tips with youth educator Dr. Bill Ziegler.
Ted, I'd like to welcome Finn Larson, Executive Director of Christian Educators. Finn, is it important that teachers have legal protection in our public schools?
Bill, it's certainly very important, and that's why at Christian Educators Association, when members join us, we support them in every way we can from a biblical worldview to encourage, equip, and empower them. But we also provide them $2 million professional liability because teachers do get sued at times. We also provide them job action protection. If they need to be represented by an attorney, their membership actually pays for them to be represented locally. Hey, we're here to serve Christian educators across the nation. That's Christian Educators Association International.
Information about the Christian Educators Association is available at 4tips.org. That's the number 4tips.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
My good friend David Webb is a radio host and a contributor here at Fox News. He's also a rock-solid conservative who enjoys going toe-to-toe with liberals, especially liberals who are members of the mainstream media, like CNN legal analyst Areva Martin.
I never considered my color the issue. I considered my qualifications the issue.
Well, David, you know, that's a whole nother long conversation about white privilege and things that you have the privilege of doing that people of color don't have the privilege of.
How do I have the privilege of white privilege?
David, by virtue of being a white male, you have white privilege. This whole long conversation, I don't have time to get
Areva,
into.
I hate to break it to you, but you should have been better prepped. I'm black.
That's right, folks. David Webb is black. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you own a liberal. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You know, I told you that the president in Washington, the power of the federal government, it's just amazing. It's really hard to describe. It's probably one of the more depressing things to me about living there. And yet, in some ways, it's the good thing about it because you have people in that particular geography who actually really do care. They're paying attention to what's happening in the country. That part I really love. But the other part is just the federal worker doldrum. And this does not describe everyone, but it certainly describes, I would say, half, if not more than them. And that is a sense of entitlement. And the sense of, no incentive, no motives. You can't fire them. And they're there for life. And they get huge pensions. And, man, when you mess with their money, oh, my goodness. Nothing else matters besides their pay, their benefits, their time off. You know the drill. So here's an article just to give you an idea of the kinds of pressures the president was under. Here's the title of the article. IRS will need at least a year to recover from government shutdown. The Internal Revenue Service has told lawmakers it would return from the government shutdown buried in millions of unanswered taxpayer letters, weeks behind schedule on training for workers, and needing to hire thousands of new employees for this tax filing season. It is likely to take at least a year for the IRS to return to normal operations, according to two House aides who spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly about the numbers. I just wanted you to hear that part because you see how this is. These two House aides who are not supposed to be talking about this, you can't imagine who they work for and what agenda they might have, are telling the press that it's going to take the IRS at least a year to recover. And what that's all about is telling you how horrible the shutdown was, and you're going to pay for it. You are going to pay for that one way or another. We're going to impress upon you, the American citizen, how horrible it is that President Trump shut down the government. And so how dare he do such a thing? And so and then also, of course, the airports in New York, some of them started shutting down. Air traffic controllers started calling in sick, and I'm not prepared to actually talk about that part, but I did see in my inbox that there's a suspicion of, collusion between some of the heads of these agencies and perhaps the Democrats, just saying. And so that's the kind of pressure the president was under. And so not to be left out, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which used to be held in such high esteem, has a new letter, director named Christopher Wray, and this is what he said. This is in the inspiring speech he gave to members of the FBI. I want you to hear part of it. Here it is.
Hi, everyone. We're now 5 weeks and two missed paychecks into this mess, and I wanted to touch base with all of you again. I know tons of you are feeling the anxiety and the emotional strain of this shutdown, and 100% of you are feeling the financial strain. Making some people stay home when they don't want to and making others show up without pay, it's mind-boggling, it's short-sighted, and it's unfair. It takes a lot to get me angry, but I'm about as angry as I've been in a long, long time.
Okay, that's enough.
Sure, I
get it. You get the point. I mean, is that inspiring? This mess, he's telling. He's encouraging FBI agents, these strong men, who go out and protect us about their emotional trauma, the anxiety of going 4 weeks without pay. Look, it is hard. I don't want to do that, but really and truly, that's anxiety. I guess it would be anxiety, but emotional stress. I mean, really and truly, I think I would just say, I'm going to invoke my husband here, but when he heard this, I would say he came near to having a reaction, and his observation was that Director Wray maybe should be wearing a pink hat. And so these are the men, you know, so upset about the emotional stress of these poor FBI agents, while meanwhile, across town, this is what the agents are doing. Let's listen to CNN clip four.
This is exclusive CNN video. This is what happened this morning before sunrise, just before 6 a.m., when Roger Stone, longtime Trump associate and advisor, was taken into custody by the FBI. There's a moment of audio on here that I want to play for everyone, because this is what the first sounds that Roger Stone woke up to this morning was the FBI pounding on his door and shouting this. I want to just play this for a moment.
FBI, open the door.
Joining us now is CNN producer David Shortell. He was on the scene when this happened in Fort Lauderdale. Tell us everything that transpired this morning.
Allison, an extraordinary morning. We were here at 5 a.m. waiting for whatever was going to happen. It was dark, 6 a.m., just after the hour. About a half dozen police vehicles with sirens, but no sound. Silent sirens pull in front of this Fort Lauderdale home where Roger Stone was presumably asleep. The lights were off in the house. About a dozen officers, FBI agents wearing tactical vests and with large weapons, fanned out across his front lawn. One went up to the house and rapped on the door, shined a flashlight inside, said, "FBI, open the door." Moments later, as you heard in the video, it said FBI warrant. That's what the agent said. We then saw a light go on the second floor. And moments later, there was Roger Stone in the doorway. That was our video exclusively you saw shot by Gil De La Rosa. An extraordinary arrest here in Fort Lauderdale this morning.
Yeah, and you know, you wonder, okay, there's Roger Stone. Now, what's going on here? Roger Stone is a guy who's been around D.C. for decades. I think he worked in the Reagan administration, or at least he was on the, I don't think he worked officially, but he was always involved in politics. I happen to know a little bit about this. So he's not the most reputable person. He's kind of like Paul Manafort in the sense that he's a political operative. And I'm telling you, none of them that are in the thick of this are, you know, completely squeaky clean. They're not Sunday school teachers, okay? So, but Roger Stone's alleged crime is that he communicated, they think, not with WikiLeaks directly, but through an intermediary, trying to find out if WikiLeaks was going to release more stuff on Hillary Clinton and the DNC's email. He didn't release it. He didn't hack anything. He's trying to find out if they have more stuff to help President Trump get elected. Could I just say that that's not a crime? That's not a crime. If WikiLeaks did, in fact, hack the DNC email, that's a whole different issue, but it's not Roger Stone. Roger Stone's trying to find out if they did do that. He's using all of the tools available to him to find out if they have more dirt on Hillary. That's not a crime. That's not a crime. It has nothing to do with Russia as much as Bob Mueller would like for it to. In fact, let me just tell you what. I want to read this from Judge Jeanine Pirro. She says, she says it so well. I'm going to read what she says. While still dark and well before dawn, 29 armed FBI agents and a rifle-toting SWAT team clad in body armor, fatigues, and tactical vests arrived at Stone's Fort Lauderdale home. 17 vehicles, including armored trucks with lights flashing, waited outside as agents banged on Stone's door, yelling through the bullhorn, "FBI, open the door!" So CNN has a videotape of it, which I'm going to talk about in just a second. So CNN says, in the course of the conversation with Allison Camerota, that there was some unusual grand jury activity that alerted them to this. And as Jeanine points out, grand jury activity is always behind closed doors and in secret. How did CNN possibly know that anything was going to go on at Roger Stone's house? And Jeanine says, admit it. You got a call from one of Mueller's people. You did. That's a crime. Ladies and gentlemen, Roger Stone, Byron York tracks the real charges against him. The charges are basically that he lied to Congress in one of his testimonies about details. He lied about communications with people. This is the allegation. We don't know if he did or didn't. But these are the terrible, no good, horrible things that caused 17 agents and all these cars to drive up and, bang on his door. His wife is deaf, by the way. You can imagine what could have happened if he had not been there. I mean, it's a lot like the Paul Manafort thing, and it's unheard of. And Jeanine talks about that. She said she was a federal judge, as you know, for a long time working with the FBI. She says, what the Mueller team did here was not only laughable, it was embarrassing to everyone in law enforcement. Waking a couple up pre-dawn is chaotic enough, but when the wife is deaf, a directive from someone with a gun drawn is a catastrophe waiting to happen. He wasn't a flight risk. He had no guns. His passport was just about to expire. She says Mueller's intent was to poison the jury pool to make Stone seem like public enemy number one over an indictment for a nonviolent crime that had nothing to do with Russia or collusion. It was a process crime, which means this is what Mueller has indicted all these people for, is for lying to the FBI or to Congress. And they continually ask them questions, it would appear, to make sure, to try to entrap them. That's what the allegation is. I think it's a very legitimate, I don't think it's far-fetched. I think it's exactly what's happening. Byron York has a great article about this, and we'll put this on our Facebook page because Byron kind of traces what Roger Stone is actually being charged with. And this is how Byron puts it. The FBI agents arrested longtime Trump associate Roger Stone in a paramilitary-style raid at his home in Fort Lauderdale early Friday morning. A CNN producer on the scene said the arrest involved heavy weaponry. And then Stone, of course, was taken into custody without incident. By the way, he was out by noon. If he was a high risk or some sort of a criminal, how could he be out on bail by noon? But he was, and he was on Tucker Carlson on that very night. And I want you to hear just a little bit of what he said to Tucker. Let's listen. Clip 8.
Look, Tucker, I think we both know the game here. Wear Stone down financially, make sure that he's broke so that he has to plead guilty to these charges, even though he didn't commit them, and then try to flip me against the president. I'm facing $2 million now in potential legal fees. People can go to stonedefensefund.com to help me, stonedefensefund.com. I'm in for the fight of my life, but I will not quit. I will not fold. I will not bend. I will not bear false witness against the president. I intend to fight because this indictment is fabricated. This indictment is thin as can be. My attorneys are highly confident that they can win an acquittal. But I'm not a flight risk. I'm 66 years old. And I'm essentially broke since the leaks from the special counsel's office over the last 2 years have dried up my consulting business, since the censorship and shadow banning on Facebook have substantially dried up my book sales. As you know, I had to end my life and health insurance in December because I couldn't meet the premiums anymore. Every dollar I scrape up has to go to this fight, but still I fight on.
I just think it's thoroughly disgusting. Just keep in mind what I played for you a minute ago. The FBI director, Christopher Wray, this mess of a shutdown. It's so hard on all you workers, and it's creating anxiety and emotional stress, and it's mind-boggling. And I'm actually really getting angry, you poor people. And yet, at the same time, he's sending out this SWAT team. He's cooperating with Robert Mueller. To bankrupt people like Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, people that have the full weight of government and all of the law enforcement coming down on them to try and take down a president. And there's no other reason for this. Roger Stone and Paul Manafort were not public enemy number one. If they created crimes, they can be given a subpoena. They can the communication can go to their attorney. They can then voluntarily show up to be arrested. This is just horrendous what they're doing to people. And keep in mind, they're not doing it to anyone else. Sarah Huckabee Sanders said something to that effect. So just see if I can find her quote. Will we see the same people we know have all made... Will we see the same people we... Will we see the same people we know have all made false statements? Will that same standard apply? And she's talking about, of course, people like Hillary Clinton. Many people who have testified, the former CIA director, John Brennan, all of them have lied to Congress and many of those around Hillary, but nothing has happened to them. The Podesta brothers, nothing has happened to them. It's all about people that surround President Trump. The unfairness, unfairness is just even too kind. This is a coup on the American president. There's just no question about that. And as a matter of fact, how did CNN know about that early morning raid? Well, it could be because the person on the spot, the CNN reporter who was outside of Roger Stone's house, was a guy named Josh Campbell. Who's Josh? Well, Josh was a supervisory special agent with the FBI and served as special agent to the FBI director, James Comey. So he's the CNN reporter who just happened to know that the grand jury, they just knew, even though the grand jury's secret and off the record, no one's supposed to know what they're doing, they had activity. And he just, of course, followed a legitimate lead. The grand jury didn't contact him. Bob Mueller's team didn't. He just knew, it was like a sixth sense, that Roger Stone was going to be arrested by all these, by the SWAT team and all these agents. He just happened to know that, this guy who worked for as an assistant for James Comey. See, this is just so dirty. It really is. It's so dirty. It's a shameful thing. And I know I'm discouraging you, and I don't mean to. I'm trying to get you to fight. Don't give up on this. We need to replace our House and our Senate, except for the very few good people that are still there, which we should fight for because they're doing everything they can to hold back this wickedness. We need to stand up for the president who's trying to protect his people. And don't be weary in well-doing. We're going to fight. And having done all, we'll stand, right? Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
You shall not covet your neighbor's house or anything that's your neighbor's. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said, "An economic system that allows billionaires to exist is immoral." Someone may want to let the former bartender turned congresswoman know that the top 1% of wage earners pay nearly 50% of all federal taxes. The top 10% of wage earners pay nearly 70% of all federal taxes. And the top 20% of wage earners pay about 85% of all federal taxes. That money funds things like our national welfare programs. Don't let them entice you to harbor disdain for the wealthy. Socialists bank on covetousness to gain support for their regressive policies.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. President Trump caved to Nancy Pelosi on the State of the Union speech last week. Why? Look no further than the spineless Republicans in the Senate. Led by Mitch McConnell, the Senate was just about to flee the president en masse over the shutdown. The president decided it was better to surrender to the opposition than to be betrayed by his own team. So once again, the president is standing alone as the only political hope for American conservatives. He still has three powerful weapons in his arsenal. One, he can continue to stock the federal judiciary, including the Supreme Court, with constitutional conservatives, which will impact jurisprudence for decades to come. Two, he can veto bad legislation and dare Republican renegades to vote with the Democrats against their own president. And three, he still has the base, who will stand with him as long as he stands for the wall.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Our concern about 13 Reasons Why has not diminished. If you've signed the AFA petition to Netflix CEO Reed Hastings, then you've probably heard the story of Anna Bright, who killed herself after binge-watching the show. But did you know she wasn't the first, nor the last? Other young people have been influenced by this program and have taken their own lives. Netflix says they want to stimulate conversations about taboo topics like teen suicide, but they still refuse to have a conversation with the American Family Association about the dangers of their show. Please pray that God will change Mr. Hastings' mind so that he pulls 13 Reasons Why before another life is lost. Look for the AFA action alerts with information you can email and share on social media so that others can sign the petition too by visiting afa.net. Every vulnerable teen is another reason why.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The U.S. Senate can't muster the 60 votes required to build the barrier we need to make an appreciable difference in the national security and humanitarian crisis along our border with Mexico. So, the partial government shutdown continues while the dangers associated with a porous frontier intensify. Notably, it is predictable that the numbers of aliens coming here illegally will swell if another political stalemate results in a renewed and violent government crackdown on the desperate, starving masses in Venezuela. Hidden amidst such refugee flows will doubtless be Cubans, Iranians, and other jihadists to whom the odious Maduro regime has given Venezuelan passports. In short, we need the wall, and we need it now. The commander-in-chief must employ the U.S. military to extend and strengthen fences where required, so as to permit the border to be closed and the government reopened. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
You know, and speaking of response to what happened, a summer calling for this, and I completely support it. Could I just say before I even read this? This is from Rick Manning of Americans for Limited Government. The Senate Judiciary Committee should ask William Barr, that's the candidate for Attorney General, if he condemns the use of FBI pre-dawn raids for process crime allegations leaked so that they can appear on television for political consumption. If he refuses to condemn them, then Barr is not suitable to be Attorney General because he is unwilling to stop the politicization of the Justice Department as it continues to target Democrat political opponents to create political coverage by media outlets, and the nomination should be withdrawn. I say, hear ye, amen, and amen. And I want to give you some good news before I go to the next story, which is not such good news. And here's the good news. You remember Kelly Ward? Kelly has been on this show several times. She's run for Senate in Arizona more than once, and she's been defeated more than once. She was way ahead in the polls of Jeff Flake when the John McCain forces came in and undermined her. They love to make Kelly look like she's a crazy, but she's not. She's not at all. She's a doctor. She's solid as she can be. Conservative. She's a fighter. She's an amazing woman. And so now they thought they had knocked her out in this last Senate race when they came in and offered Martha McSally, who's a Republican rhino, who loves, you know, Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and the others. Now she's serving in the Senate along with the radical leftist Kyrsten Sinema, who is asexual. You know, she has the strangest description. The people that have been elected, so many of them are so beyond what would have been the norm for the American public, you know, even 10 years ago. And so we're going to suffer from all the people that are now serving in there, no doubt about it. But Kelly, over the weekend, the Arizona GOP had been controlled by John McCain and his forces. And I can tell you that's not good. It's just not good. After John McCain ran for president, he had and lost against Barack Obama. He had millions of dollars in his campaign war chest. And I'll never forget an interview he did that where he detailed how he was going to transform the Republican Party into his own image. And he went around the country and recruited candidates in various states and put tons of money, outspent, you know, other candidates, and got them elected to the Senate. I know that because I was in Illinois, and he recruited a guy to run. I'm just blanking out on his name, but he won the race because he had so many millions of dollars, but over my dead body, because I worked so hard against him because I knew he was a leftist. He was a Planned Parenthood supporter. He's the one who had the stroke and ended up not being reelected last time. Just maybe you guys can help me with the name. He was a fan of John McCain. So John McCain was trying to totally revamp, and he did so much damage in Arizona. He's the reason we have Jeff Flake. And he's really the reason we have Kyrsten Sinema and also now Martha McSally. So conservatives in Arizona are pretty upset about this. And so over the weekend, they actually went in and a really strategic move. They overthrew the leadership of the Arizona GOP. And guess who emerged as the winner? It's Kelly Ward is now the chairman of the Arizona GOP. And I can tell you, so when I tell you that locally, you can do so much to change things. I'm not kidding. You may not be able to go to Washington. You may not be able to, do something on a federal level, but you could organize your county, your precinct, your state, and you could take back government. So one other quick thing that's good. Steve King went back to Iowa and appeared for the first time in front of a bunch of constituents and received twice a standing ovation of affirmation. And I just wanted you to know that. And that was good news for me, too, because I can hardly bear the way he has been defamed by the press and by Republican leadership. So that's a good story. The other story is Nicholas Sandman, who is that kid that was from the school in Kentucky, whose face was splattered all over the news and who was roundly disparaged, just savaged is a better word. You know, remember the boys should be put inside the school and burned alive? They should be fed to a wood chipper? Well, those are the things that were said about Nicholas Sandman and his family and his friends. And so now the family of Nicholas Sandman have they had already contracted Kentucky's largest public relations firm to help repair the damage. But now they've hired an attorney. His name is Lynn Wood. He's nicknamed Attorney for the Damned by former CBS anchor Dan Rather because he has gone after damages against people trying to defame other people. He's got some famous clients, including the family of JonBenet Ramsey, and also Richard Jewell, who was the guy who was the FBI charged with having bombed his workplace over the Centennial Olympic Park situation. That's a long story. It was 1996. But this guy has got the creds, and now they've hired him. And I think they're going after these media folk and public persons who said these horrible things about these kids. I think that's good news. Now to not such good news. You know that a few days ago, the governor of New York signed into law a bill that would make abortion legal for all 9 months in the state of New York, and even granting permission to kill babies outside of the womb who don't have the decency to die before they're born. It is the most shocking piece of legislation around the country, and they even lit up the World Trade Center, or the structure that took its place, with pink lights that night. They were so excited. Governor Andrew Cuomo made this announcement to members of the legislature, and I wanted you to hear how it sounded. Here it is.
Okay, good evening. It is a good evening this evening. Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations. Let's give a warm welcome to all the advocates who have worked so long and so hard for so many years. And let's give a round of applause to all the legislators who finally got it done. We took the vote. And we have a special guest of honor. It couldn't come together any better than it's come together today. Sarah Weddington, who argued Roe v. Wade, here today on the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Let's give Sarah a big round of applause.
Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York, it is absolutely unfathomable. By the way, Sarah Weddington, that he introduced, of course, was the attorney in the Roe versus Wade case. And the thing that, in case you don't know about this, both of those cases, Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton, which was the companion case, were lies where they recruited women. Sandra Cano, I think, was the first in Doe versus the second case, and the first was Norma McCorvey. And neither of the stories that Sarah Weddington presented, neither of the stories were true. They were complete and utter lies, and both of those women participated in those lies in order to legalize abortion. They created the worst-case scenario in order to, it was all smoke and mirrors. And, of course, Andrew Cuomo is thrilled about this, and I want to give you kind of an idea of what he has just unleashed. In case you don't know, and if this is hard, maybe if you've got small children, you might not want them to listen to that. On the other hand, you might want them to, so that they can have it seared in their consciences for life. The horrendous things that are happening, and they're not fooled or persuaded by the laughter and the clapping, that they don't miss the fact that this is wickedness of the most, of the highest order. So this is the law. And it basically says the kind of late-term abortion they're going to allow now in New York, it's the baby's injected with poison directly into its skull or torso. The baby then suffers a hideously painful death, which it will certainly feel because of the developed nervous system. We're talking about a baby ready to be born, close to it, capable of living outside the womb. The mother carries the dead baby around in her womb for a day. The next day, there's an ultrasound to check if the baby is in fact dead. And if the baby isn't in fact dead, he would have been moving around and suffering in agony for the past 24 hours. Then he will be injected again. The mother will be injected again. The following day, the mother will deliver that dead baby. And sometimes she delivers in the clinic, but if she can't make it on time, the clinic is perfectly happy to recommend that she give birth into her toilet. And so that's what they're applauding about. I can hardly bear it, honestly. And so there's an article in the National Review. It's called The Indefensible Morality of Andrew Cuomo, and it talks about how he is Roman Catholic. And he said that this father was the first person to say, and you probably heard this, you that are older, this whole notion that, well, I'm personally pro-life, but I can't force my personal views on my legislative decisions. And after his dad, who was also the governor of New York, made that decision, then lots of other politicians followed, including the Ted Kennedy, Joe Biden, John Kerry, and on it goes. And so Andrew Cuomo boasting, clapping, cheering. It was Freedom Tower, that's what they call it. I want to read you an excerpt from Alexandra DeSantis' article in National Review. She says, just beside Freedom Tower, two pools mark the spot of the 9/11 terrorist attack. Around each of them are inscribed the names of every person murdered that day, and beside the names of 11 of those women, the carved stone says, and her unborn child. Beneath Cuomo's shrine to abortion on demand, the real story is written. These are human lives. And that's an article in the National Review. I want to give you, first I'll give you some bad news. I guess it's good, and it's at the same time bad. You remember, of course you do, the videos that were released in 2015 by David Del Leiden on the Center for Medical Progress that showed Planned Parenthood apparently harvesting and selling and preparing to sell baby body parts, talking about eyes and brains and gloating over getting wealthy over it. Remember those tapes? I sure do. And you may remember that Planned Parenthood jumped in. They must have hired a PR firm. I'm sure they did. You can take it to the bank. They did. They claimed that those videos by David Del Leiden were deceptively edited. And the authorities came after David Del Leiden in California. Remember that? They sued him. They hunted him. And he lost some of those cases, but he has won a recent case. And that is that the Fifth Circuit explicitly found in their ruling that the Center for Medical Progress's videos are authentic and they can be used, especially in the state of Texas, as a means of regulatory and other enforcement proceedings, primarily defunding Planned Parenthood. This is bad news for Planned Parenthood, and this is good news for all of us. And in two other states, a very different story. In Ohio, where John Kasich, another Catholic who couldn't bring himself to sign a heartbeat abortion bill that made abortion illegal after a heartbeat began, was replaced by Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, who said he will absolutely sign a heartbeat bill. And I guess they'll probably have to send it through both houses again. I'm guessing. I don't know what the process is, but he has said he will sign it. That's Mike DeWine in Ohio. And then in Iowa, the governor there did sign. In the last few days, she signed. You know what? This is not true. This is an old article. This is dated May. Somebody just sent it to me. In May, she signed a controversial abortion bill into law on Friday, setting the state up for a lengthy challenge in court. And so in Iowa, the babies cannot be aborted, at least at this point, if there is a heartbeat, which often begins, you know, at the very, you know, right 6 weeks. And then in Ohio, there's hope that something like that will pass. This is going to be a showdown at the Supreme Court. And I have to say that our new Justice Kavanaugh is going to have to be bold on this, and so is John Roberts. I can't imagine, and of course the other justices too, I can't imagine them allowing. I just don't know what's going to happen in New York. Surely, to goodness, someone will sue that governor in that state. I don't know what this, I'm not an attorney, and it's all fresh, so we'll see what happens. But I can't imagine that pro-life forces are not already planning on ways to challenge what Governor Cuomo in that state has just done. Well, so there's good news and there's bad news, but the good news is that we have a loving father who has not been caught off guard by anything I've reported this morning. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.